So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
My goodness, folks, I tell you what. What a day, what a day, what a day. Welcome to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. My apologies, Mr. Martin is not with us yet. He should be joining us momentarily. I'm sure he had all kinds of crazy things going on today. You know, he runs that business that Barack Obama built. So, you know, sometimes we got to cut him a little slack for being late. In the meantime, a lot going on today. Fascinatingly enough, I know this is going to be hard for you guys to believe, but apparently Barack Obama is getting some questions about his donors getting special access to the White House. No, I know. Say it ain't so, right? A Democratic president, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama, is sitting here basically selling White House access for donations. Apparently there has been a new PAC. A pro-Obama PAC put together. Obama is fully aware of this, called Organizing for Action. It's supposedly a so-called social welfare group that's going to have four meetings a year with Obama for individuals who give at least $500,000. Now, you can spend it any way you want to, folks, okay, but that's pay to play. That's pay to play. Now, of course, you know, we've had these questions in the past about other presidents and everything else. You know, but it's interesting because in May of 2010, Obama was vocal against this type of behavior. He said big money interests shouldn't be able to buy a seat near the president. He went on to say that's one of the reasons I ran for president, because I believe so strongly that the voices of ordinary Americans were being drowned out by the clamor of a privileged few in Washington. Well, guess what? He is the same as all. We've been talking about this and talking about this for some time. There is no difference with Barack Obama than anybody else. Barack Obama was going to be the most transparent president in history, has chosen to be the obvious non-transparent president. We also additionally have, you know, the same situation where we have, you know, now he doesn't want big money involved in the White House, and he's selling seats for $500,000 a pop. So, you know, stay with us, folks. This is going to get ugly before it gets better. Let's go straight to Mr. Martin. How are you, sir?
Hey, you're assuming it's going to get better.
Well,
I mean,
you know,
let's be honest. He come from Chicago politics. Well, I should say, did any thinking man actually doubt this going this route? I mean, really?
No, I don't think anybody could have doubted it. I mean, that's the whole thing, Ed, because Obama is sitting here, you know, doing the same damn thing he's ran on twice now, said he's not going to do. You know, this is a pro-Obama PAC. His staff is in it. I mean, Press Secretary Jay Carney even talked about it in a press briefing. You know, so, I mean, organizing for action. Okay, well, just call it what it is. Call this an Obama-supported super PAC or PAC. I don't care if you call it a super PAC or a regular PAC, but it's an Obama-supported PAC. You pay to play, and you're going to get access. I mean, at least be honest about it. You know what I mean? Don't sit here and tell us all these different things vocally and then do it anyway and then lie about it. It's ridiculous to me.
Yeah, well, you know, I think he, just like any politician, they're emboldened by it. I mean, he's not going to get called on it.
Of course not.
The alternative media is going to do it, but, you know, hell, once they start buying a little ad time or something on the network and stuff, they'll shut up. They just like the Courier Journal. They'll shut up because they don't want to, you know, if there's a revenue stream there, they don't want to miss it.
Well, that's pretty true. I mean, you know, I've been told, you know, by prominent Democrats here at home, elected Democrats, you know, that they're going to do what they can. They're not going to get me any advertising money unless I agree to shut up. So, you know, alternative media people like me are just too stupid to be bought out, I guess. I don't know. Let's go right to the phones, man. This is incredible. I believe this is our good friend Ken Molman. Have I got that right?
It is indeed. How you doing,
my
guys?
My goodness. I finally got your number right, my friend. How are you?
I'm
impressed with myself.
I'm doing real well.
What's going on, man?
I had a call. You were talking about the new pack that, you know, basically it's pay for play. And
yep.
You know, it's an interesting thing, and honestly, I'd be surprised if this doesn't run afoul of some federal campaign finance laws.
Well, of course it does.
That blatant. Well, but the thing is, I mean, that's kind of a big deal when you're that blatant about it. Some of these laws are a joke, and make no mistake. You know, some of them are silly. You get a slap on the hand, $100 fine.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing, bureaucracy really doesn't like it when you, like, flaunt it in their face that you're breaking their rules. And they tend to hit you with pretty big, nasty fines when you do that. And, you know, one of the big things is that super PACs are not supposed to coordinate in any way, shape, or form with a candidate or a candidate's campaign. And if this PAC is collecting money for the purposes of helping his reelection or somebody else's reelection or whatever, if they're putting – I mean, that's a kind of a danger zone area.
Well, essentially, Ken, what they're doing is the Organizing for Action – PAC is supposedly a PAC that was designed to do nothing more than promote Obama's agenda and what he believes in. They're not actually supposedly be considered as political thing. Quite frankly, we know that's a lie. In private meetings and phone calls, according to the New York Times, they're the ones that originally covered this story. In private meetings and phone calls, Obama's aides have made it very clear that the new organization will rely heavily on deep-pocketed donors that are similar to the super PACs that Barack Obama has went nuts on, saying that he just absolutely deplored them. What's really interesting here is, though, the Organizing for Action PAC has been set up as a tax-exempt social welfare group. Because they call themselves a social welfare group, that means they're not bound by the federal contribution limits or any laws that bar White House officials from soliciting contributions. So Obama can go out there and send his whole staff, which he's already doing, all of his aides are already out there. He can send all of them out to solicit contributions, you know, and they don't have to worry about the serious reporting requirements for campaigns. And this group is actually going to self-regulate. So they're doing everything they can to skirt the law in this. And Barack Obama is supposedly appalled by it. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of interesting things here.
There's a lot of disappointments. Anybody who is philosophically consistent and agreed with Obama, especially on his first term, you know, his promises in his first run, has to realize now that they've been completely and totally lied to and only goes to bed at night, you know, believing that McCain or Romney would have been worse, not that Obama's made anything better. Anybody who says otherwise is dreaming. So the point is, you know, it's unfortunate. And, you know, I guess now that is one of the new things that's going on that they're exploiting. And I've actually been doing some of this through the smoking ban stuff, the loopholes of putting money into a 501c3, then the c3 funneling it to a c4, and then the c4 funneling it to something else, and then funneling it into a PAC. There's ways to move money, tax-free money that's not supposed to be political, to get that moved up into the political realm, and it just takes a couple of steps. It's basically legal money laundering, and
sure,
it happens all the time.
Well, it's really fascinating because, you know, and Ed, I want you to weigh in on this in just one second. I want you to hear this because it's really fascinating because the OFA official said it would voluntarily disclose the names of their large donors every few months. So there's nothing exact there. They would not ask administration personnel to solicit money, but Obama's aides will probably appear at some events. Well, we know that Obama's aides are already out there soliciting money, according to the New York Times. We know that they're already scheduled at some events. And what's really interesting here is, you know, this is all supposedly to back Obama's agenda, his policy procedures, you know, but the access is clear cut because the contributions that are being told by the president's aides are that those who are paying $50,000 get to meet Jim Messina and Mr. Carson, John Carson. He's the group's new executive director, and Jim Messina, of course, is the former campaign manager for Obama. So these guys are going to lead, you know, get to meet everybody that puts up $50,000. If you give or raise $500,000 or more, according to their aides, you get to sit on a national advisory board for the Office for Action, the OFA, Mr. Obama's group, and you get to attend quarterly meetings with the president, along with other meetings at the White House. So this is clear from his own aides that this is a pay-to-play. So I don't think we've skirted the law. I think we've flat out crossed the line into illegal behavior. However, nothing will be done about it. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I think, you know, I don't think there should be any mystery. And, you know, the old school way of doing this with Reagan and Clinton was to do speaking engagements and things like that. These guys, just flat out, these guys are setting up a money laundering scheme that I'll bet it's not only pay to play. I'll bet the particular staffers that deliver the goods, you know, can go out and speak and bring in the money. They're probably the ones that will be kept on with the Obamas as they move from the White House to it's sort of like almost like a crime family. You know, they're going to be taking their honorariums to the, you know, their honoraries to the Don and stuff, which would be Obama and Michelle, and yeah, they're gonna set it up. I mean, in a way, it's politics, and that makes it unseedy, but I tell you what, part of me's got to sit back and think, this is genius. I mean, it's evil.
Oh,
it's evil genius, but I'm like, damn, these guys are going to have a hell of a lot of seed money by the time, cause he's doing it now, so he's got 4 years of getting the president's ear. This super PAC, this fund or whatever, this thing is going to be so flush with cash. It's going to have its own gravitational pull as people are trying to get near the president and stuff like that. I mean, when they get out, just some conservative investments, they are living large for the rest of their lives. And you know what? They'll probably put their headquarters in Honolulu or something, wherever he wants to be.
Well, there's no doubt.
I say, part of me is I just sit here, I'm grinning, thinking, damn it. You know, the mob and stuff, they come up with money laundering. They come up with pump and dump on stocks and all sorts of schemes. I'm thinking, damn, this guy's good.
And what's really fascinating here, people need to understand this too. I mean, the group that these guys have formed is a 501c4 for those in tax parlance and all that good stuff, because, you know, 501c3, 501c4, these are tax-exempt organizations. The difference is a 501c3 can't involve themselves in any kind of political activity. A 501c4 can, and there are some limitations on whether – you know, your money is tax deductible on a 501c4 versus a 501c3. So there are some very slight differences in the tax code. However, you know, if you want to look at good examples of 501c4s, the NRA, for example, is a 501c4. They're a social welfare group. The Sierra Club, they're a social welfare group. From one end to the other, right? Liberal to conservative. So, you know, these are 501c4s. But what's interesting here is, you know, the Sierra Club and the NRA, they have particular agendas. These social welfare groups have particular agendas to their 501c4s. The Organizing for Action, this 501c4 of Obama's, is nothing more than an extension of the administration. Everybody that works for Obama is totally involved in this. They've got complete campaign teams that do nothing but you know, hawk the president's second-term agenda. So we look at this, you know, I think there's a major loophole here that these guys have walked right through the door on, but how they can do this, you know, and Obama is the one who was out there screaming and hollering about this kind of stuff. The 501c4s, and most super PACs are 501c4s. So we look at all of this stuff. Obama was the one screaming out there, and now he is abusing it, you know, for everything he can get from it.
He made it his second term. This is the last office, elected office, he's going to hold. So now he's padding things up to where he can hold a non-elected office for the rest of his life. He's going to have access to all the money, the power, you know, the praises. He's going to have he's locking down his third, fourth, fifth, sixth term with money and influence. He's taking key players with him. He's going to be just read into it. He's not ready to leave the game, and he's going to make he can make a lot of money doing it.
Well, there's no doubt about it, and we can look further at this, too. And by the way, Ken, I'm leaving your mic open, so you don't have to worry about it. Jump in, all right? But by the way, though, I mean, here's another thing, too, because we do have other examples of this kind of behavior, just not on the federal level. In New Jersey, for example, there's 501c4 that was set up by the Friends of Governor Chris Christie. You know, it's called the Committee for Our Children's Future. They've run hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of advertising praising Governor Christie. New York, Governor Cuomo, you know, he put together 501c4, the Committee to Save New York. This was run by business leaders who are friends and involved with Governor Cuomo. It's raised millions of dollars from corporations, private sector unions, big surprise there. You know, and of course, this group also supported Cuomo's agenda. But, you know, New York Times actually revealed at one time that this group also, Governor Cuomo's group also, took gambling money to the tune of about $2 million into that group while Cuomo was actually developing a proposal to expand casino gambling. And there was nothing done on that. So, you know, the chances of anything being done about this, does it look bad? Yes. Does it stink to high heaven? Yes. Will anything be done about this to hold these guys accountable? Of course not. We've already got precedent saying so.
No, I mean, it's been going on for a long time. And really what it is just it's these politicians, and sometimes you got to wonder, you know, look, they know, some of them know they're leaving office, and what will be really interesting to see as with the Obamas is as he gets into his third year and you know, coming up on his fourth, it'll be interesting to see how many politicians get in, you know, what the ratios are, depending on how much money they have. You will see more and more politicians getting in line with him. Like I say, he's taking it with him is what he's doing. He's doing it now. So he's got 3 years to get this done and get this thing powered up. He wants to be the Democratic Karl Rove is what he wants to be.
Well, I think that's very true. And I think ultimately what's really happened here is, you know, the Democrats were throwing a hissy fit during the last presidential election because of the super PACs. And the Republicans were out raising them in the super PACs. So they've come up with this loophole way of raising money without throwing it into a super PAC. And this is money that they can do basically anything they want to with. You know, there's only one thing that keeps me from filing as a 501c4. I mean, that's easy to do. You just got to file the paperwork, send in some money. Bam, it's over. I mean, you know, if you want to get right down to it, what we do at Louisville Politics and everything else is social welfare. You know, we bring the issues to light and let the people make their decisions. You know, so we could qualify for the same thing, except, you know, I wouldn't feel right outing anybody that's making donations. You know what I mean? I don't like that aspect of it. And this may be a way that they're going to be able to avoid that. They said that they're going to put their donors out there every few months, but to my knowledge, there is no law requiring them to do so. Am I right in that interpretation, Ken?
Yeah.
That's correct.
You see that with the McConnell Center all the time.
Okay,
yeah,
go ahead.
What they're doing here, these 501c4s are the funnel. They're the beginning of the funnel. And the more complicated funnels, you start with a 501c3 that funnels the money up to a C4 because a C3 is tax deductible. A C4 is not. Then the C4 funnels money to a 527, a PAC. And for folks that are wondering where the heck these numbers are coming from, these are IRS codes. So Section 501c3 is a nonprofit. C4 is social welfare. they can engage in limited action. But part of that limited action is they can just give a bunch of money to a 527, which is a PAC or other political organization.
Right.
And I honestly believe, and I've been saying this for a while, given the Citizens United ruling that happened, what, 2 years ago or so, we're going to see less and less money go into the hands of the parties and into the hands of candidates, and more are just going to end up in the hands of these PACs. And this is the wave of the future, folks. It's all going to be PACs, and the PACs are going to run everything. And you know, I'm all about freedom and speaking, you know, free speech. But, man, we're going to have a society that's basically going to be run by the message that's going to be out there. It's going to be PACs. There isn't going to be individual voices anymore. There's not going to be even party voices anymore. It's going to be special interest PACs all the time.
And that's what's really disturbing because, you know, what you're ultimately seeing and what we have seen over the last two or three elections is a staggering amount of money being spent on presidential elections and federal elections and state elections, things like that. We are seeing, you know, billions of dollars spent on one-term presidency for a job that pays $450,000. But this money isn't coming from the people. The people don't have it anymore. You know, what these PACs do by using these super PACs, these 501c4s, and then funneling that money into these Section 527s that you just mentioned, you know, this is all by design. The money that the people actually give, these grassroots campaigns and stuff like that, are a joke. They're a drop in the bucket compared to what these guys give from the likes of GE, IBM, Ford, UAW, you name it, insert corporation here, lobbyists, a special interest group, because that's exactly what's going on. And you're right, Ken. What this basically does, it's empowering the corporation to buy elections and give favors, and we, the people, are the ones who are going to pay for it. How much more can we pay? Look at Detroit. We talked about that last night. Look at the cities across America that are failing and going into bankruptcy and things like that because we're losing everything we've got because the corporate interests are making a policy. President Obama isn't smart enough to make any kind of a policy. He's dumb as a rock. He really is. But he's a great figurehead that knows how to read a teleprompter, and he's told what to say and when to say it, and he does. So, you know, we've got a real problem here that's going to get a lot worse going forward. You know, another interesting story out there today, guys, and Ed, you're going to love this one. You know, there was a lot of backlash, me included, who did not want John Kerry as Secretary of State. I think John Kerry should be barred from any government office. I don't like the guy. I don't think he has a clue. I think he's got the ultimate rich deal in marrying Teresa Hines and heir to the Hines fortune. You know, but apparently we're not alone. You know, where Hillary Clinton could smooth her way into just about everything, we've already got a situation developing. Top Syrian opposition figures are boycotting or have been boycotting a meeting with Secretary of State John Kerry that's supposed to happen later this week. Now they're actually backing off a little bit because, you know, the president is going to change some language to where he's actually supporting the Syrian people by asking, you know, their leader to give up President Bashar's side, asking him to step down. But it's interesting because we didn't hear these kind of stories when Hillary was Secretary of State, did we? Since when did a place like Syria decide they're going to boycott a meeting with the Secretary of State of the United States?
Yeah, well, I mean, we did have the issues where Hillary and a few others were saying arm the rebels, and Barack Obama said not now. But, yeah, I mean, it's like, look, these people that are boycotting, they're rebels. They're not even, you know, I guess to some extent they have some sort of official recognition, but that a ragtag group of, you know, group of people that needs us, they need weaponry because the Russians are putting it in on the other side. Mm-hmm. They get the chutzpah to boycott us. It's like, wow, really? You know, once again, I look at stuff nowadays, and there's some days I'm disgusted, some days I just laugh, and it's just got, I have to laugh at this. You know, on one hand, I think, well, good for those guys. I mean, they've definitely got stones, that's for sure. But and then you just laugh. It's like, wow, you know, what is it, a week on the job, and you're already getting snubbed by an unofficial ragtag group of rebels?
Well,
it's going to be a long 4 years, John.
and I think so, because, I mean, ultimately what's really going on here is, you know, the Syrian rebels feel left out because they keep trying to get Syrian President Bashar Assad to step down, you know, and face prosecution for what they say are his problems. You know, however, you know, our administration has not been, Obama has not been willing to to mention Assad and anything at all. So the Syrian rebels are saying, hey, we're not going to sit here with your Secretary of State because you're not backing us. So for the last 2 days, these guys have been going nuts. They've sent a State Department team over to London and everything else trying to keep this event intact. They've had direct phone calls with John Kerry. They've changed official worded statements. They've done everything they can possibly do to appease the Syrian rebels. As a matter of fact, when Kerry went to London Monday morning, he made the statement that it was time for Assad to relinquish power. Now, that's not a statement we should make. That's for the Syrian people to decide on their own. And that's why we hadn't made that statement to date. But they're so concerned about the Syrian rebels that, you know, they told Kerry to make that statement. And that's okay, but why are we appeasing these folks? That's my real problem. You know, why are we appeasing these folks? It makes no sense to me.
Yeah. Well, not only that, it just shows, and somewhat, you know, and I'm not in the State Department, but to me it seems a little amateurish because the problem with Syria is not Syria and it's not the rebels. It's the Russians. The Russians are arming the Syrian government. They're arming Assad. They're the ones that are saying you ain't, you know, looking at America saying don't even think about it. You know, they're the ones we need to talk to. Yet we're, like I say, we're talking to people that in many cases live in tents and caves.
Well, you know, it's really
sleep out in the desert. And, you know, like I say, you want to bring this conflict to an end, go talk to the Russians. You know, if you think you're on your game, which I think that may be part of the problem. It's like, yeah, 1 week on the job, everybody's probably saying, oh, God, this guy is nowhere near being ready to talk to Putin.
and that's what's really fascinating, because that was where I was going to go at. You know, Russia, truthfully, right now, Russia has a willing partner in Barack Obama. I don't think there's any other way to put that. When you look at what Barack Obama is doing here, the freedoms that we continue fighting for every day, liberties, we're going after Second Amendment, we're going after everything in the world to destroy the American way of life. Putin should be sitting back laughing and smoking a cigar with Obama saying, welcome to my world, Mr. President. I mean, he really should. So why this is going on and he can't deal with Putin directly is totally beyond me. But as we know, Syria is filled with violence. You know, it's a mess over there. But it's a big mess, largely in part because of what we do. I mean, when you look at the Libyan rebels, you know, versus the Syrian rebels, when you look at what's going on in the Middle East as a whole, you know, we continue, you know, hell, we're even friends with Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood. This president is. So, you know, it makes no sense to me why they would play this game with the Syrian rebels, because that's exactly who they want on their side based on their own attitudes and based on what they've done so far. Am I wrong about that?
No. I mean, you know, I just, like I say, I just think it's amateur hour. We should be talking to the Russians and the Chinese primarily. You know, we've got our set out, and this is where so many of the conflicts. And when you look at it, it's like, look, these superpowers can work this out. We can, you know, everybody holds a little influence over these little sandbox regimes and stuff. So. Hmm? Why aren't we talking to them? And like I say, I think it's maybe they just don't think he's up to his game. I mean, he's going to waste his time. He's going to say things like he said, you know, time for Assad to go.
Well, and let's not forget.
Guess what? Your first week on the job, you already threw sand in the gears for when you have to talk to the Russians, because the Russians are saying that's not, you know, they're backing him, and you're saying it's time to go. Great. Now you've got this huge issue to get past with the Russians who are backing Assad, because you know what, you should have chosen your words a little more carefully, because I'll bet you a dollar on that when the time comes for us to meet with the Russians, that's going to come back to haunt them.
Well, we'll never hear about it because mainstream media won't let us hear about it. But here's the
thing,
though, because
will tell us.
Well, yeah, so we think. Yeah, we'll get it from Russian TV, because that's where we get most of the true stories anyway. But it's really interesting because, you know, when it comes to the Syrian rebels, there's no doubt that the United States is backing the Syrian rebels. If you need proof of that, just check out Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is funneling the Croatian arms to the Syrian rebels. Saudi Arabia and us have to have this love relationship. You know, Saudi does exactly what we tell them to do, and we do exactly what they tell us to do. So if the Saudis are funneling weapons to the Syrian rebels, you can bet that they're doing it with our blessing. There's no doubt about that. So for this administration to continue acting, you know, like they're creating a fracas, it is beyond belief to me. And to sit here and create this kind of a thing, you know, giving in to the Syrian rebels was just a matter of time. And unfortunately, that's exactly what they're doing. I don't like Assad. I can't stand Assad. I really don't. I think he needs to be removed from office, and I think that he needs to be brought up on charges and prosecuted for murder, among other things. However, he is the Syrian president. It's up to the Syrians to handle their business. It's not my business to get in the middle of, nor is it the U.S. business. So let Syrians do whatever they need to do. That's not our problem. But what is our problem is we've got to take a quick break. So we're going to take a quick break, folks. We'll be right back. You listen to the Ed Spraker Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. For you guys that want to call in, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. Same numbers as always. For you guys on the listening queue, make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad. We know you want to get on air. For everybody else, hey, there's the chat room, or you can even IM direct at myviewmatters@AOL.com. We'll be right back. You listen to the Ed Springsteen Show.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers.
Hey, everybody. Gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
Song, I really, 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 really do. Tim Hawkins, comedian Tim Hawkins, timhawkins.net. He has that song and quite a few others on his website, timhawkins.net. And I tell you what, you guys will flat out love it if you visit it. It's so true, you just don't know what to say. You know, we're going on and on about Syria. We're going on and on about Obama and his, you know, deep pockets with the 501c4 that they're going to go ahead and sit here and let him do. You know, but the one thing we haven't really spent a lot of time on the last couple of days is coming up at the end of the week. What is that, Ed Martin?
Oh, our sequester, whopping $85 billion trim job. You know, when you're talking 85, we're going at it with a meat cleaver. It's like, what? Really? Dude, do you happen to check out the size of the federal budget? $85 billion? You're not going at it with a meat cleaver. You're going at it with a box cutter.
Well, you're not even going at it that far. I think you're going at it.
It's a plastic butter knife.
There
you
go.
This is ridiculous.
Plastic butter knife or a metal spoon is what it is. $85 billion is nothing. $85 billion is like me deciding on a difference between White Castle and McDonald's for dinner. Seriously, that's all it boils down to. It doesn't make one bit of difference. And what people are not understanding here is that this so-called sequester that these guys are sitting here screaming and making all this daggone noise about doesn't mean squat. And this isn't to cut back spending. This is to cut back on new spending. So we're not even dealing with the rationale that we have to cut back on spending to balance our budget. No, what we're doing is, well, we're going to borrow $85 billion less. But we're still going to borrow $1 trillion. We're just going to have to borrow $85 billion less and make cuts. And that's what makes it so pathetic. And it really truly is, guys. I mean, it's all about defense contractors. Good example of that, Huffington Post. Yes, I know the source, right? But even the Huffington Post are sitting here talking about it, and they try to make this poor me plea on behalf of the defense industry today. But Technico Corporation is a private defense contractor. They're supposed to begin repair work on the USS Oscar Austin. It's a naval destroyer that just came to its home port in Norfolk, Virginia. However, if the sequester goes in, the Technico's contract is going to have to be canceled to repair it. Now, you talk about repair. All they're doing is going in and replacing beds and toilets for the 380-person crew. Now, I'm not the smartest guy in the world either, okay? And I say that a lot, and I prove it daily, I'm sure. Beds and toilets. Come on. Really? How many billions of dollars does it cost to replace 380 beds and toilets? And do we not have civil engineers, which is basically what they're supposed to do, you know, to take care of base housing, things like that? Do we not have civil engineers who could actually go in and replace a bed and a toilet? Sure we do. But you have
very
to satisfy.
So the Navy personnel that maintain the ship when it's out at sea could do it.
Well, that's exactly it. You can, you know, you replace bunks.
They probably do it all the time. I mean, these guys can fix complex radars and missiles and jets and, you know, and they manage these enormous ships that stay on the water forever and a day, water purification systems, or you name it. They keep it going out on the ocean. Oh, but, yeah, we got to bring it in to replace a toilet.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. So it's not like this is something that can't be done in-house, that we have to have a private defense contractor for. Technico apparently has about 450 employees that work for them. You know, they're based out of Chesapeake, Virginia, but they work for them, and they do nothing but pure defense industry work, this kind of stuff. So according to Technico's president, you know, Ray Wittersheim.
Let's refer to it as military-industrial complex work. Because
well, let's do it. I don't care either way. That's fine.
Yeah.
But if sequester goes into place, the Pentagon's going to have to cancel the contract to repair that ship and five other warships. Now, you have to use the term warships because they're dealing with, you know, beds and toilets, and everybody knows how many people get excited about beds and toilets, right? So, you know, these warships, if you will, you know, Technico is going to lose their contracts. They're going to have to lay off about 120 employees. You know, they don't want to do that. You know, and I understand that. We don't want people to lose jobs. However, really? I mean, we're looking at $85 billion, which is nothing. We're looking at these private defense contractors who are getting these golden parachutes because they're buying off, you know, politicians, you know, and we're complaining because they're not going to get a job to replace a toilet or a bed. Well, you know, I can replace my own bed. I can replace my own toilet. The beds are attached to the wall. Take the screws out. Put new ones in. What's the big deal? You know what I mean? Anybody would have
a
brain.
Are they wore out, or is it, you know, the other question is, as with the military, are they worn out, or is it just part of a maintenance contract?
You know, that's a good question.
I've been on some old battleships, tour sites and stuff, and, Yeah, those toilets, they don't look like they would actually wear out. And neither do the beds, to be real honest with you. Those things are built to last. So it's like, that's another question. Is this just part of a maintenance contract? Or are they actually working? Are they malfunctioning to the where, you know, it's not taking the poo where the poo needs to go?
Well, it's interesting, too, because, you know, Norfolk is home to the Navy's main shipyard hub. They are the eastern headquarters for the entire U.S. fleet. So when you look at this, about 45% of all the economic activity that goes on, in Norfolk has to do with defense. That includes the cities of Hampton, Newport News. I mean, and you look at this realistically, it's not just the ships. You know, it's all the stores, it's all the restaurants, everything that goes with it, everything that goes with it. So, you know, so if we have a sequester, there's going to be some jobs lost, apparently a couple of hundred. 45% of their revenue derives strictly from our tax money. And I have to sit here and ask myself one thing. You know, last night we talked in depth about the problems in Detroit, Michigan, where the auto industry basically pulled out. They lost 50% of their manufacturing jobs in less than 10 years. And they're nothing but a gloom and doom example of what happens in America when you lose manufacturing. Okay. But when we look at that, where was the federal government stepping in to save them with our tax money? Why did Detroit have to? Why is Detroit on the verge of bankruptcy? Why are 60% of the people living in poverty?
I don't even think it goes to that. I think what I'm hearing, you know, when I hear somebody say that, my first reaction is like what you were saying is, it's like, so what you're saying is we, because your economy is dependent on it, we can never stop spending this much money in your economy, or your economy will collapse. You will not adapt. You will not, you know, you screw it. We've been in a recession for half dozen years now. It's like, come on, it's going to hit you sooner or later. You know, the debt's been building since post-Clinton, but yet we're effectively being told in an indirect way that we cannot, you know, they're looking at us saying, you cannot spend fewer of your tax dollars. You have to keep sending the same amount of money, because if you don't, it will damage our economy. We're dependent on you. Don't you dare cut us off.
Well, that's exactly it. You know, and these experts, so-called experts, I mean, now understand there's 280 contractors, private ship repair contractors in the Virginia region. They employ about 40,000 people. And that's according to William Crow, the president of the Virginia Ship Repair Association. But he goes on to say that these cuts will be catastrophic if they're not averted or quickly reversed. Now, I've got to be honest with you here. I don't see anything catastrophic about it. I'm like you. You adapt. Here in Louisville, for example, back in the 70s going into the early 80s, Louisville had all kinds of good-paying jobs. You had International Harvester before they closed down. You had Ford. GE was booming. We had all of these different things. GE is less than a third of what it was then. Ford is roughly basically about 20% less in its workforce than what it was in its heyday. International Harvester completely disappeared. We've lost all of these different jobs here, and we had to adapt. Now, is Louisville paying for it? Sure we are. We've got all these low-paid jobs and everything else. But we're still surviving, even if we are the third worst city in the United States to find a job. You know, we're finding ways to survive somehow. We're not at Detroit level yet, though we're fast approaching that point. But, you know, to sit here and say because you're a federal government-reliant business, so we have to protect you, and we let the auto industry completely bail on Detroit and destroy Detroit, we're not looking at other cities like here in Louisville or even Simi Valley, California, when a tech bubble burst. You got all these different things. Who is the government to sit here and decide who should profit and who should win and who should lose? That's the problem I've got with this.
Yeah, well, I tell you another problem I have with it is we're fighting a multi-trillion-dollar war over the last 10, over the last 10 years or so. We're fighting a multi-trillion-dollar war, so we're pumping all that money into the military and industrial complex and the defense Department of Defense dependent local economies. We've given you that. You got a decent chunk of a $700 to $800 billion quote unquote stimulus. And now it's like, okay, so hey, you know, let's not forget that. You got a stimulus in the form of a war or two. You got a stimulus in the form of And then this applies to a lot of, you know, much of the government. You got a stimulus, it came in the form of a, you know, stimulus. And now you're saying, oh, crap, you know, after all that excess money that didn't need to be spent, you know, if we had just been like a nice constitutional country, not gone and invaded other countries and, you know, not bailed out the banking sector, not mm-hmm. done all this other stuff, if we hadn't done all this other bailing out, we probably wouldn't need the sequester. It probably would have never come up. We wouldn't be in great shape, but you know, we'd be a few trillion better off.
Well, we'd be fine. You know, that's the whole situation. We would be fine if they would just do their job.
After all that money has been thrown into these pits, whether it's the finance sector, whether it's the Department of Defense sector, whether it's the government jobs sector, which is where a lot of the stimulus went, whether it's the sodium and the social welfare, it's like, oh, so we threw all that money in, and now they're telling us, oh, crap, you mean after all those trillions upon trillions upon trillions of dollars that we've spent that, truthfully, we probably shouldn't have or didn't have to. It's like, oh, now you want to cut $85 billion and it's going to be a disaster. Well, my question to the Newport News people and stuff is like, hey, look, we fought a war or two, and it's been boomtown. We have been blowing crap up. We have been, you know, we've been buying stuff, missiles. We have been running our military to the brink, so you've been doing great on maintenance. We're buying missiles, and then we just shoot them and blow crap up. And the contractors, it's all been great. You know what? You're going to have to face a cut because everybody else, you know, a lot of the other sectors in the economy are still taking a beating, and it's just sorry. What more do you want us to do? Start another flipping war?
Well, that's exactly it, because in the larger picture, that's exactly what we want. You know, that's what makes the American economy move right now, because defense contractors and the Department of Defense is the biggest budget we've got when you look at jobs and then things like that. And these are good paying jobs, folks. So not the $7, $8, $9 an hour jobs you have to work at every day in your city because you don't live in a defense town. No, these are good paying jobs, $15 to $25 and up an hour, you know. So we're looking at all this, but that's exactly what they want. They want another war. So you can bet that sometime in the next couple of months, if this doesn't get fixed pretty quickly and we don't agree to go ahead and borrow the $85 billion, which personally I think we will, we're not gonna lose anything. But what's gonna ultimately happen is we're gonna end up in another war because we have to provide income for these people to continue on with what they do instead of them learning to adapt or fail like the private industry.
We have to make it necessary. The last thing in the world the politicians want is to actually to honestly pull back a little bit. So they're going to have to come up with it, and it's going to have to be a crisis. It's going to have to be a war. Somebody's getting close to weapons of mass destruction, or the crimes against humanity.
Well, they've already set the stage for that.
Somebody's going to discover oil somewhere new, and we're going to fight it with that.
Well, they've already set the stage for that. They're already proven.
If the economy doesn't magically turn around, I'm with you. They're going to start another war, right? Because we are so dependent on that now. That's we make capital goods. We make good stuff, and a lot of that stuff goes to, you know, is allocated towards making more stuff. But we also make a lot of stuff that's geared towards a little more than blowing other stuff up.
Well, I mean, that's exactly it.
Jump in here.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, the problem is here twofold. Number one, wars don't actually boost the economy, and you know, that's been something that's been out there for a long time because of World War II. You know, I have my own theories on that. You know, if you kill a quarter of the population off, all of a sudden the goods that are in the entire populace, everybody benefits because now there's 25% more for everybody who's still alive. Today's wars, people don't die. I mean, it's not like World War II where, you know, what was it, 10% died or whatever it was. You know, we don't have wars like that anymore. And that's why there is no perceived bounce from the economy from war. And if you take, and it's sad that they justify continued military actions in foreign countries where people are being killed by drones or soldiers or whoever, and the justification literally is, well, if we pull them back, it'll be harmful to the economy. Oh, so we should keep invading countries and killing people because it's good for our economy? I mean, really? That's a horrible.
But that's the mindset, though, Ken. I agree, but that's the mindset. And realistically, do you honestly think, and I've got to ask you this, you'll know, but do you honestly think that the Republicans are going to let the defense contractors take an $85 billion cut, since the Republicans typically are the ones who always scream defense and overfund it anyway?
I would like to say yes, but I have to say I agree with you. They're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Their special interests, their money funnels.
I remember reading some time back that the defense, you know, the military industrial complex, actually, you know, obviously very intelligent, that they have operations and they have Department of Defense-based jobs, whether they're contractors, suppliers, mm-hmm. or whatever, in virtually every congressional district in the United States. So
yep.
you do expect there is no congressional district in the continental United States or anywhere else that is not affected by the cut. They've got these politicians by the short hair, and the politicians don't have the balls or the vision to see past it. We're essentially handcuffed to it, and that I don't find that funny at all. I mean, we are, as Ike warned, we are dependent on the military industrial complex. We are stuck with them. Because, I mean, that's all you hear. I mean, amazing posting on Facebook, I think it was yesterday, this Progress Kentucky, not the racist one that they run with, but the one where they're posting on it, and this is an extremely liberal anti-McConnell group. They're posting that, oh, if a sequester happens, you know, 54,000 military, you know, personnel, civilian military personnel, and I have to jump right in and say, so what you're saying is now you're actively defending the continued funding of the military industrial complex and Defense Department. You know, it's like, wow, really? Department of Defense? And you guys?
Well, let's be real
like,
clear here,
suddenly,
too.
Suddenly, when it gains you a few political points, you're screaming that the military-industrial complex, that the war machine is going to find itself having to cut back jobs, and I just see that thing. My God, we're totally screwed now.
Well, let's be real clear here, too, because under federal law, any company, any defense contractor with companies more than 100 employees have to give a warning 60 days prior to any mass layoffs. So, you know, we continue talking about it. Everybody's talking about Technico and these other 400-some-odd, you know, defense contractors in and around Virginia. But really, there's only been one employer. There's only been one employer who has sent out notices of mass layoffs at all, and that was BAE. BAE Systems, one of the largest military contractors in the world, and they sent, you know, conditional layoff notices to about 3,500 employees. But they weren't in one spot. They were spread out over Virginia, Florida, and Hawaii.
Yeah.
And they sent them a notice last week. So, yeah, you know, that's
well,
the thing.
Well, if you remember, way ahead of the sequester and during the election, the Obama administration basically told these military contractors, hey, you don't have to abide by that.
But now they do.
We're going to give you a pass. We're not going to hold you. We're not going to enforce the law on you. If you just,
right.
you know, whatever you do, don't give us any negative headlines 90 days out from the sequester, you know, that
right.
passed earlier. They gave them a pass on it. So that law doesn't mean anything anymore because it would be bad press. So
right.
they got a pass on that. And I think the way the contracts read is the employees that get laid off that don't get the 90-day advance notice, the company has to keep paying them.
Well, that's the 60-day
advance
notice.
I'm pretty sure that got set up. So
well, they actually get punished. They actually get punished by the feds, and I'm not sure exactly what that is, whether they have to continue paying them or if they have to pay fines to the feds. I'm not sure how that works, but, you know, they are required to give a 60-day notice.
And the Fed gave them a waiver, and hell, for all we know, the Fed's going to make good on the lost salaries. You know, everybody's going fishing. If they're laid off, they'll probably, you know, like the last time the government shut down, the park rangers didn't show up, people didn't show up
right.
to work. You know, you can't go see the Washington Monument. And then after they started the government back up, they gave them back pay.
Yep.
For the time they weren't at work.
Yep.
So it's like, really? is this really a big deal?
That would be like the UAW. That would be like Ford giving the UAW, you know, 6 or 7 weeks worth of back pay for people who go on strike because they don't like contract. It's a joke. But we do know we got major problems there. And I want to go ahead and put a couple of quick stories out there before we get off the air. One. You know, this is another comical side of Democrats and politics. Greg Fisher, aided and abetted by the Courier-Journal, is now trying to push some kind of a poll. He's trying to convince the whole world in Louisville that 72% of voters support this local sales tax option. Are you kidding me? You know, they believe he's saying that 72% support it and 19% are opposed to it. Now, you know, I've got to be quite honest with you. You know, I know that the Courier-Journal is biased. I fully believe that 100%. I know that they are lock, stock, and bid with prominent Democrats in this town. But anybody who believes that there's a 72% of voters support the proposal, the proposal to put a local sales option, local sales tax option on the ballot, I've got some swamp land right here in Louisville, Kentucky, at the top of Muldrow Hill. So we can go ahead and sell you for a nice, decent price of about $1 million an acre. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. And it's really fascinating.
Yeah, well, I'd be interested in seeing where the Courier-Journal did their polling. They probably did it all around Jefferson Square.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
Surrounded by government buildings, and then they probably went to their building and surveyed their employees. That's pretty much it.
Well, here's the other funny part of that. This is what Fisher had to say, and this is hilarious to me. Greg Fisher, your mayor, folks, your mayor, not mine, because I can't stand him. Greg Fisher said, and this is a quote, people want to have the right to vote. It's what freedom and democracy is all about. They also see the need in the community for specific capital projects and love the idea of being able to participate in identifying them and then voting for them at a specific price, paid for in a specific way, and having the project sunset. I got to be honest with you, Mayor. You used the term specific quite a bit in your little statement there, and quite frankly, you wouldn't know what being specific is. That's the most generic statement I've ever seen. And if people have the right, if people want to have the right to vote, guess what, Mr. Mayor? They have that right to vote now in elections. How many people show up in November to vote? Less than 50%. So if people are so in love with what freedom and democracy is all about and they want the right to vote, then you're failing miserably in your argument because the statistics, the actual statistics on the books, don't back your theory, which shouldn't surprise anybody when it comes to Greg Fisher. So that's an interesting.
I'll tell you what, not only that, I like the idea of these sales tax districts because, you know what, when they pass it, I want to see a map of them and where they are and what streets they border so I can make sure to never spend any money in those districts just so they can kiss my ass.
I'll tell you what, guys.
These special tax districts like that, I understand what's going to actually happen here. You're going to end up in districts where there may be one or two people that actually live in the affected area and, you know, 40 or 50 businesses that will end up having to collect this tax. And that's if you make it so that they can subdivide current political divisions, that's going to get really ugly. But the reality is here, and their key selling point here is, well, we need to be able to raise temporary revenue. Well, you know, they said the same damn thing. I'm up here in northern Kentucky. Cincinnati has that stadium, the new stadium's up here. And that temporary tax, it already now, not only is it not temporary anymore, but now it's not sufficient. And so they're also raising property taxes on top of the sales tax to cover the cost of those stadiums. And if you don't think that that's not what's going to happen here, you know, hey, I'll sell you a couple of stadiums.
Oh, hell, we got the Yum Center, man. We know.
Well, I was going to say that's where I was going to go in, because the Yum Center is costing us $1 million a month of taxpayer money. That's what the real issue is. They want to pay for the Yum Center because the Yum Center is losing money hand over fist, just like so many of us said when I ran for mayor in 2006. I told them. This was a losing proposition at this site. There's no way you can sustain it. When you give U of L, the University of Louisville, the University of Louisville rents out the Yum Center. I think it's $5,000 per event. So every basketball game U of L has over there, they cost them $5,000 to put on the show. Now, the problem is the cost alone associated with putting on that show is about $8,000. So you're already in a $3,000 hole just on a U of L basketball game by the time you pay employees to come in and work, you know, and electricity and all the other things that go with it. So, you know, you're renting a place out for $5,000. It's costing you $8,000 to run on a bare minimum basis. You know, you clearly put together a plan for disaster. So, Ed, you're right. The KFC Yum Center, that's what this is all about. They want to pay for the KFC Yum Center, and there's no doubt this money is going to go into something called a general fund. They're going to screw around with the money. We're never going to know exactly where it's going or if it's going where it's supposed to. And we're going to be in the same boat that Ken just mentioned about Cincinnati and Riverfront Stadium. Go ahead. I tell you what, guys, we are out of time. Wow, this hour flew by. Ken, thank you so much for the call, my friend. I appreciate it very much. Ed, I tell you what, final thoughts, dude. Wow.
Oh, you know, like I say, let's final thoughts. I'm having one of those days where, you know, I just look at everything from our state legislature to our ridiculous city government to the federal government, and they, you know, and the $85 billion cut after we, you know, after we found out a $700 billion stimulus really didn't stimulate much. So how much can a cut really cut? You know, I just have to be skeptical, and I've got to laugh anymore. Like we were saying off air, it's like sometimes I just want to look at the government, just want to look at everything and say, you know, if you've seen that final scene in the old classic and even the newer version of Vanishing Point where you just step on the gas and slam into the bulldozers, sometimes I think, you know what, we're sitting here piddling around arguing about things like that. Like, hell no. Let's go out. You know, if they say empires die with a whimper and stuff, it's like, yeah, let's break that mold, man. Let's just, you know what, if we can't figure it out, let's just step on the gas and smash this thing into the wall, and, you know, we'll bust it up and all the wrong parts will go poof and burn up, and then we can start over again. Because right now we're just dragging out this long, painful, whimpery-ass death with the incompetence and the lack of vision and courage in our politicians. So, dudes, come on, let's just grow a set, and let's just, you know what, if you think you're right, put your foot on the gas, put your money where your mouth is, and let's see what this thing's got.
Hey, I can't argue with that. I tell you what, I just get totally disgusted with so much of the news anymore. It is just unbelievable. You know, Louisville, third worst city to find a job in. One of the top five tax cities in the nation. Kentucky, one of the top tax states in the nation. You know, we look at Detroit and what happened there when they lost their manufacturing base. We have no manufacturing base. We have assembly. There's a big difference here anymore. We don't manufacture anything. When you go on and you start looking and going up the ladder, when you look at Detroit, when you look at everything else, you're thinking, wow, what a dismal story. But instead of facing what's really going on in America from an out-of-control government who likes to tax and spend, instead of doing without and learning how to balance a checkbook that each one of us have to do every day, what we continue to get is arguing over something called a so-called sequester, you know, which is basically going to be $85 billion in automatic spending cuts that aren't going to cut anything.
No,
this is not
self-saving.
That's it. This is not money that we have to go spend. This is money we're already borrowing to spend. This isn't money that is new spending. This is money that we don't need to spend in the first place because we don't have it. And it's going to equate to less than 1%. Less than 1%, folks, of our budget. Now, you tell me in your household you haven't had to cut more than 1% of your household budget over the last 5 years, and I'll argue with you. When you look at the price of goods at the store, when you go to the store, when you look at the price of gas, when you look at all of the things that you have to pay for on a daily basis and tell me that you're spending less than 1% more than you were just 2 years ago, I'm going to call you a liar to your face. I'm sorry. I have to. Because the reality is that each one of us have to bust our butts and face our budget deficits each and every payday, each and every month, each and every year. We have to adjust 5% to 10% every single year that we lose out of our income. And thanks to Barack Obama's tax increases at the beginning of this year, that job got even harder. To sit here and try to convince us that this $85 billion cut is going to hurt the American people is an insult to the intelligence of all the American people. Do I feel sorry for somebody if they lose their job in Virginia, Florida, or Hawaii? Yes, I do. Losing a job is never a good thing. Losing a job is a catastrophic event to a lot of people. It really is. I've lost jobs. I know how that affects you mentally. I know how that affects your mindset. I know what it does to your families. And I don't wish that on anybody. But the reality is, that 95% of us in mainstream America have had to face it each and every day. We've had to find a way to survive. And those people, having to do with that because of an overbloated defense budget, will find a way to survive. It's the nature of the beast. So get off your butts, quit your whining, hold these elected politicians accountable. Remember, they answer to you, not the other way around. It's time you started understanding that. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, Dale the Truth will join us at 7, as always. Thursday night, don't forget to tune into the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show. And, of course, our good friend Ken Molman with Liberty Unbridled on Sunday nights at 7, right here, same time, same channel. Mr. Martin, we'll see you next week, okay?
All right, sir. Have a good one, Mr. Springsteen.
You too, sir. That's it for tonight, folks. We'll see you tomorrow at 7. Take care.